This is a Hog Sports Network podcast.
It's Wednesday, March 27th, 2024. The number one Arkansas baseball team won its 20th game of the season Tuesday night over Arkansas Little Rock. Last week, the Razorbacks won a road series at Auburn. This week, coming up, LSU, the reigning national champion, comes to Baumwalker Stadium in one of the biggest series of the year. We'll talk about it all today on the Whole Hog Baseball podcast, but first, a word from our sponsor.
Kendall King, where it's all about teamwork. Building brands around a design concept, Kendall King takes pride in their skill sets in displays and signing, as well as .com photography, content creation, and influencer marketing. The bases are loaded, and the Kendall King team is bringing it home. This is the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast, presented by Kendall King, the first podcast devoted entirely to Arkansas baseball, featuring insight from Arkansas baseball color analyst Bubba Carpenter. Here's your host, Matt Jones.
Welcome in to the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast with Bubba Carpenter. I'm Matt Jones. Bubba, let's before we go back to Auburn, let's talk about the UALR game. That's fresh on our minds. It was played last night. Arkansas wins 11-0 in seven innings. Thank God for the run rule, by the way. I mean, it has totally changed so much about baseball. I was looking at this the other day, and they beat Auburn in a game that went over 3 hours. But before they went to Auburn, none of their victories this year had been over 3 hours long. Everything had been 2 hours and something. And, you know, a lot of it has to do with the pitching, right, but a lot of it has to do with the run rule and really getting a hold of these games that get out of hand. And that was the case Tuesday night against Little Rock.
Well, I look at the run rule two different ways. I understand why they put the rule in, but when you've got a pitching staff like ours, I don't like it.
You need work, right?
And I don't know how many times, like Kendall Diggs last week, you know, I said, I guess it was the Mizzou game. I'm like, look, I've never in my life pulled against Kendall Diggs, but I do not want him to hit a home run right here. And he hits one off the batter's eye. So, yeah. I mean, it's a good thing. And you know what? Last night, I think the guys were glad because it was cold. Mm-hmm. It was cold out on the field. I went out there to interview Aloy after the game, and it was cold out on the field. And those guys looked cold when they came in. But, you know, usually I don't like the run rule because there's guys that we need to pitch. And there were still guys down there. I'm sure DVH and Hobbs would have loved to have gotten in that game.
I think it's really hard to pitch in a game when it's cold like that. And, you know, the way Baum is configured, the wind was coming out of the northwest last night. And so it's blowing right into the face of the fielders and the pitcher. And so it's difficult to pitch. And I think Little Rock struggled to pitch in those conditions. They walked eight. They hit four batters. They struggled with their command. Arkansas threw 72% of their pitches for strikes, and I thought that was amazing in any setting, but especially when it was that cold.
I think so, and you look at the starter for UALR last night, Stuber. I mean, he'd walked, I think, one guy in, I don't know, 70-something batters. I think
he'd like walked 17 and a third innings.
Yeah, it was crazy, and he's walked one, and he was, you know, he just had a hard time. Now, a lot of that goes to the Razorback hitters grinding out at bats. I mean, look at Peyton Stovall, 13-pitch at bat. And by the end of that at bat, it was funny. You know, he was fouling off a pitch. He had a smile on his face. He was giving him a nod. And honestly, I told Peyton after the game, I said, it's almost like he hit you on purpose just to get you out of there.
Just get out of there.
Because that last pitch, the catcher right set up way inside. I mean, he was like way inside. Like, I'm either going to hit you or get you out with this pitch. And he hit him right in the butt. And, you know, you don't see a guy pimp a hit by pitch a whole lot.
Oh, he bat flipped.
Yeah, he gave a little bat flip and a nod to the pitcher. Like, yeah, I won that battle.
So Arkansas wins 11-0. They only had six hits in the game, but they really took advantage. And this is the recipe to having big innings. They took advantage of the walks, the hit by pitches, and then they did damage when runners were on base. They hit four home runs, and I think those four home runs accounted for nine of their 11 runs.
Well, those are the hardest nights to hit. You know, they brought in one of the lefties. I said he was effectively wild. He had really good stuff. He had a curveball. He was spinning over 3,000 RPMs. You don't see that a whole lot. A lot of break on it, but he was wild. He'd throw a few pitches out of the zone, and he'd paint a couple of pitches. I thought our hitters did a phenomenal job of staying in the zone. You know, when you're facing guys like that, if you know a guy's going to be around the plate, hitting's easy. You're facing those guys that are wild. It's hard. You got to be selective and you got to be patient. And then eventually, hopefully, you're going to get your pitch. If we didn't get our pitch, we took our walks last night or hit by pitches. But when we got a pitch, we put a good swing on it and hit four home runs. And that's really good to see.
And Little Rock's a good team. I mean, they're predicted to win the Ohio Valley. They came into Fayetteville. They had beaten Morehead State last week. Morehead State's the reigning conference champion in the Ohio Valley. I think Chris Curry's done an outstanding job there at Little Rock, especially,
it feels to me like the Ohio Valley is probably a better baseball conference than the Sun Belt, or at least at the time that Little Rock was in it. The Sun Belt's undergone a lot of changes, but at the time that Little Rock was there, I feel like the Ohio Valley may be a stronger conference than the Sun Belt that they left.
Well, and I think it matches up with Curry well, because he's one of the southernmost schools, if not the southernmost school, I believe.
Probably so.
So, I mean, for a recruiting aspect, I think that really bodes well for him, because he's able to go up, you know, he can go into Texas, he can go into some of these other places and get these kids and say, look, we're going to be playing in a warmer climate than most of the other teams in the conference. I think we are the southernmost, or they are the southernmost school.
It wouldn't surprise me.
So I think that helps him with recruiting. I just think it's a good move for him, and I think he's happy. Boy, I love talking to Chris Curry. He's got
you
an
guys
energy
are buddies,
about
right?
him. Yeah, I love
Chris. I saw you giving him a big hug on the field.
Yeah, you know, I love Chris, and you know, we talk a lot about his son's swing. You know, every time mm-hmm. I get to see him, I'm like, how's the little man doing, Caleb? And he's doing well. He's a good player. You know, he gets it, you know, it's in his genes, and he's a football player as well. So, yeah, so it's always fun getting to see him and spend a little time with him.
Well, Chris is part of the Razorback family. He spent 2 years here at Arkansas. He was a volunteer assistant in 2009 and 2010. James McCann will tell you that Chris Curry had as much to do with his college success as anybody. Yeah, they worked together. Of course, Chris was a college catcher. Quick bit of trivia, who was the pitcher for him in junior college? Want a Cy Young?
Can I phone a friend?
How about I give you that lefty from Central Arkansas who won a Cy Young Award?
Gosh, it's early again.
A Bella Vista moment. It's Cliff Lee.
Dang it. It was right there. I could see his face. I couldn't think of his name.
Yeah, they both ended up going from that community college in Mississippi playing SEC ball. Chris played for Ron Polk at Mississippi State. Of course, Cliff came to Arkansas.
You know, I could see his face, because when I think of Cliff Lee, he came to a football game years ago, and a buddy of mine, they were in a box together, and Cliff Lee, they had him video, and said, mm-hmm. Cade Carpenter's a stud. Cade Carpenter's my son. Yeah. So he videoed it for Cade. And so I think of that. Every time I think of Cliff Lee, and I could see the video in my head, I'm like, what's his name? But it's early. It's
yeah.
early.
Yeah, we'll
catch me afternoon, and I'll know the answer to that.
Let's talk about the Auburn series win. Arkansas wins this series 2-1. They could have swept Auburn. They could have been swept by Auburn. I mean, these are three games that easily could have gone either way. Arkansas wins 1-0 in game one. They win 6-5 without Dave Van Horn in game two. And then they give up a 4-run lead in game three and lose that one 8-6. Just your overall thoughts as you tap the Dave Van Horn bobblehead sitting on our desk.
We got to liven things up a little bit. We got to put a little DVH there.
We meant to ask Dave yesterday, you know, what are the grandkids going to call him?
Good question.
Did you notice when John Williams announced Dave Van Horn before the game Tuesday night, it was not Dave Van Horn. It was a new grandpa, Dave Van Horn. Got a big ovation.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. Well, I think what Blake said, it's something about a coach. Just call him coach.
Yeah.
That'd be appropriate. I don't know.
Yeah. It was a big storyline of the weekend, the fact that he wasn't there for game two, and that's the night that they clinched the series. You know, and I want to talk more about Matt Hobbs here in a minute, but just the fact that everybody just kind of kept it together without him in the dugout. And he's such a, you know, you hear the coaches talk about, he's such a steadying, calming presence in the dugout. You know, he's the one that they look to when things may be kind of going haywire. He wasn't there, and it's a game that easily could have gotten away, a back-and-forth game. And I thought it showed a lot about this team, in my opinion, that they were able to keep things together and went on the road in a fairly hostile environment over Auburn without their head coach there.
I thought it said a lot about the team. You know, it's crazy. DVH talks about, you know, the value of every pitch, mm-hmm. you know, every play, you know, every pitch can change a game. And you saw it this weekend. I mean, we could have easily gotten swept, or we could have swept them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just some of the plays. I was proud of the guys for stepping up and making some big plays. I mean, you know, you look at Friday's game. I mean, there were some huge plays. And watching that game, if you're watching it, you're thinking, we're not going to win this. I'm thinking too many things are going wrong. Mm-hmm. for us to win this game. And, you know, they would score and we'd come back and answer. And that's what the good teams do. And very rarely, I'm a glass half full. I'm a glass three quarters full guy. It's running over, Matt, usually. Yeah. And in that game, I just felt like things weren't going right. There were so many little things that went wrong, and we found a way to win. And I know we're kind of skipping over the Thursday night game, but I mean, the Friday game was phenomenal. I thought Hobbs, Hobbs did a great job. And what I love about Matt Hobbs is he, when you ask him the question about, and I don't know, it might have been you that asked him about this, he doesn't take credit for any of it. Mm-hmm. You know, he credits Zach Barr, DJ Baxendale, Nate, you know, Bobby Warren, is Clay Goodwin. He credits the whole staff. He doesn't take credit for anything. Because I'll joke with him after a game when Hagan throws a shutout. I'll be like, hey, good coaching tonight, Matt. You know, and he'll just kind of laugh about it.
I mean, and that's you see the same thing with Van Horn. Every time he wins an SEC Coach of the Year award, what's he say? It ought to be staff of the year.
Yeah.
Not me. It's everybody. Speaking of Zach Barr, I don't have this written down, but have you noticed how many times in the last three games or so Peyton Stovall has been right where he needs to be positioned in a shift?
Yeah, we talked about it last night. I mean, there were multiple times he moved over, and that pitch, they hit the ball right where he was at up the middle. And then there were some times that he would shift one direction, then go back the other direction when the count changed. And sure enough, the ball would go right to him. I mean, that's – and I gave him credit on the air. The advanced scouting is amazing. And, you know, there's a lot that goes into that. I mean, a guy's swing is going to tell you where he's going to hit the ball. Like, a certain swing is going to hit a certain pitch a certain way. It is what it is. I mean, that's when you get into swing mechanics and break them down. But – a lot of things have to go right. The pitcher has to execute that pitch. Everything has to go right for that to happen. But I thought we did a phenomenal job last night. And we do all year. If you watch the way we shift, I see other teams get burned by the shift all the time. We don't get burned a whole lot.
A lot of instances at Auburn where it happened, or at least multiple instances at Auburn where we saw that too. He said we're glossing over the 1-0 game. It's like we've gotten to this point with Hagan Smith that's like, okay, well, you know, he went out there, he did a 6 scoreless, he struck out his 12, whatever. SEC pitcher of the week again. I mean, what's left to say about him?
Okay, he's good. The things that make, I think, the difference in him this year, I go back and I was talking about it Monday. The pitch he made to McMurray to strike him out, 0-2 fastball in. It was after Lovich misplayed the ball in left field. You got runners at second and third, one out. McMurray's been their best hitter.
Oh, yeah.
Now, he struggled. He struggled the first two games of the series, but that's just good pitching. We made great pitches to him. He had struck out in the fourth inning. He did the same thing, made a good pitch to whatever the
Manners.
Lefty is. Manners, yeah. But in the sixth inning, 0-2 count. Well, actually, at first base open, runners second and third, one out. I mean, he made three really good pitches, but the best pitch was a 95-mile-an-hour fastball in on McMurray. And I don't know that Hagan lands that pitch last year. He was good last year, but I don't know that he pitches out of those jams like he did this year. I mean, it's the maturity, the confidence. The stuff's been there always, but now he's got the maturity and the confidence to make that pitch. And it was an unbelievable pitch. Walks the next guy on four pitches. I really don't think he wanted to pitch to him. He went back to Manners and got him to roll over a 2-2 slider. That pitch sequence right there, those pitches showed me a whole lot about Hagan Smith.
Matt Hobbs called it the evolution of Hagan Smith, the ability to pitch out of those jams, because that's where we've seen him struggle in past years, and you're just not seeing that right now. Just to update the crazy Hagan Smith numbers, it's 28 innings, 60 strikeouts, one earned run since opening day. Yeah, the bad outing on opening day, he's been as good as I think I've ever seen an Arkansas pitcher be over five consecutive outings, and that includes what we saw from Kevin Copps 3 years ago. I mean, this is pretty incredible. What he's doing. There were a lot of good pitching performances at Auburn. I thought Mason Molina was okay on Saturday in game three, 5 innings. It's kind of similar what we've seen from him. Not as many strikeouts, but Auburn's a team that doesn't strike out a lot. It was an anomaly that they had 29 strikeouts in the first two games, and a lot of that had to do with the success of Hagan Smith, of Will McIntyre, who I thought was incredible. Do you realize Will McIntyre right now, coming into this week, he's fourth nationally in whip, a 0.70 whip. It's better than Hagan. It's better than Tigert. It's better than all of them. He's pitching really, really well.
Go Hogs. I didn't realize that. I knew they were really good. I didn't know that
good. Did we talk last week about Kerrick Jackson's quote about Will? He said that he thought the cutter looked like Kevin Copps' cutter.
Yeah, you said. Yeah, we brushed on it last week. That's a huge compliment right
there. The results are there. I'm not saying that he's Kevin Copps, but the results right now are you can't. You can't overlook what the results are against SEC hitting. I mean, he was great against Missouri, and then against Auburn, it was 9 batters up, 9 batters down, 5 strikeouts.
You know what? What makes Will so special? And I know Dave's referred to it, Hobbs, how tough he is. Uh-huh. You know, stuff is one thing, but there's a lot being said to going out there and just being tough. My dad didn't know a whole lot about the game, but he said, look, the one thing you can control is you can be tougher than that guy. He might be better, and you can always be tougher and reach down inside, and that's what you see out of Will McIntyre. I mean, watching him go out there, there's no fear at all. And you know what? You can't just sit on that cutter. And I think the catchers have done a great job because you can tell when a hitter's sitting off speed. Mm-hmm. The way he loads, the way he strides, his timing is for the cutter. As soon as they see that, he'll blow that 95 or that 90-mile-an-hour fastball by him. It's got a little carry on it, too. It's not an easy pitch to hit, especially after the 84-mile-an-hour cutter. So mm-hmm. I think our catchers are doing a really good job of reading what the hitters are doing. It's almost like they know when a guy's sitting cutter, boom, they throw a fastball by him, speed him back up, then get him out with the cutter away.
I think Stone Hewlett is another one who has stood out to me. Against ULR on Tuesday night, it was three up and three down. Against Auburn, he came in two left-on-left situations, including once with the bases loaded. Gets out of that with a strikeout. Then he got a strikeout against McMurray, who was his teammate at Kansas in Game 3 after Auburn had gone up by a couple of runs. His numbers are incredible right now. And we thought that he was going to be a left-on-left specialist, which he has been. But he's pitching really well against right-handers, too, and that may increase his usage going forward.
I think so, but his ability to come in and get lefties out, because when you're getting a lefty, typically when you see Stone Hewlett in a game, he's facing a 3-4-5-hole lefty.
Mm-hmm.
And those situations can change a game. I mean, you know how it is. You look at our 3-4 lefties.
Yeah.
So for him to come in and make the pitches that he has been awesome. I mean, he comes in, he's got that slider. I like the fact that he can start.
He's got a heck of a break on that slider. Oh, it's unbelievable.
The spin on it's crazy. Yeah. I mean, he's spinning it close to 3,000 RPMs. I mean, it's 2,900. He hadn't spun one over 3,000 yet. I think as the season goes along, he will. But he can throw it, and it tunnels. He can tunnel his fastball off of it when he needs to. Once again, if he feels like they're sitting slider, he can throw a fastball by him. But he can start it at their front hip and break it over that front door of the plate, and that's such a hard pitch.
Yeah.
And then after that, he can make them chase away. But a lot of lefties can't throw that pitch. Righties either. But that's what makes Brady Tigert so good, is he can throw that breaking ball behind a righty and break it right over the front edge. Now, he's missed a few times and hit righties with that pitch. But when it's on, it's deadly.
Hewlett, 16 outs, 12 have been by strikeout. He's really – qualifying innings, he doesn't have them. If he had the qualifying innings, his whip would be the lowest on the team. He's got a 0.54 whip after last night's game against Little Rock. It was an up-and-down weekend for Cooper Dossett and Gabe Gackle. It was the first time we've seen Arkansas try to recycle them on the same weekend. Cooper, well, let's start with Gabe, because he pitched in Game 1, came in, did what he does. I don't think a base runner got on against him, got the save in a 1-0 game. Dossett comes in Game 2. He has to work around the 34-minute umpire delay, which I want to talk to you about that here in a minute. But he got outs on either side of that, got a big Ryder Helfrich threw out a base runner behind him. That was a big sequence when he was there. And then they come in on Saturday, and it looked to me like they just didn't have their stuff, like they had used their best stuff earlier in the week. And that's what you see a lot of times with pitchers. And I think this is a time of the year that you're still, you know, it's weird because it's SEC play, but there's no spring training in college baseball.
Right.
And so you're still trying to figure out, how can I use these pitchers? You know, when is the – you're still trying to find out about them and when is the best time to bring them in. And I think maybe we found out something about those guys that maybe they don't recycle as easily. And that may be making too broad of an assumption based on one weekend too.
Yeah, I mean, I look at Dossett. I was so proud of him, the way he came in, and then he stayed in during the 30-minute umpire delay.
34-minute.
Yeah. And by the way, I don't know, we may talk about that in a minute. But
let's just talk about it right now. Let's get it. What on earth happened right there? Because
it's 2024.
I guess they don't have an umpire locker room at Auburn at the stadium. From what I understood, he had to go across campus, which the football stadium is not very far from the baseball stadium at Auburn, but he had to go across to the football like indoor facility, and that's where the umpires dressed, put on his gear, and I mean that was. I understand there's a delay when something like that happens, but 34 minutes, my goodness.
Can we not give them a locker in the visiting locker room?
Well, they're somewhere? Renovating the stadium right now. Maybe they get a locker room in there after the renovation.
Look, that can't happen. You see umpires go down a lot. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of times home plate umpires, you see that same thing. They get hit in the mask. They're kind of dazed a little bit. Concussion protocol.
Seems like
all
you
that.
See it happen about once every year, 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, so there has to be a system in place. That's just too long. It should not take that long. The other guy should have his stuff at the field somewhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, put it in a bag and throw it over in the corner in the visiting dugout. I don't know, the home dugout. But that's got to – you got to clean that up. And I know Hobbs was politically correct about it. Oh, the umpires communicated through the whole thing.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. Communicate. But it was still a giant, colossal – screw up, in my opinion.
At a certain point, I thought he had gone back to the Marriott.
You know what was going on, and you know, but credit the guys. When something happens like that at home, yeah, it's easy because you got your home clubhouse, you know. Yeah. But when you're on the road, it's tough. That's mm-hmm. a different. You're in a different environment. You don't have your things. Baseball players are creatures of habit. I thought it was huge for Dawson to go back out after that long. I was actually texting with Mark, his dad, and I was like, dang it. I mean, he's done,
mm-hmm.
you know, because he was rolling.
Mm-hmm.
And he came back in, made some good pitches. And,
oh, he's
and
really good.
Yeah, so, you know, I thought that was – that showed a lot about Cooper Dawson and kind of his evolution as a pitcher, because that was a tough situation he came into and made some really good pitches. You know, Ben McLaughlin, unbelievable mm-hmm. play. I mean, that's the play of the game right there. That's a weird hop. In between hop, he smothers it. Slips and falls, is still able to get his glove on the bag.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just that whole thing was awesome. But, yeah, Cooper staying in during that delay I thought was big for us.
What about Brady Taggart? What's going on with him? Because command's an issue.
Well, okay, so Hobbs talked about it.
He did.
Matt talked about how he's getting too rotational. He's kind of pulling. And you see it a lot. So we talk about hitting mechanics all the time, but we don't talk a whole lot about pitching mechanics. Pitchers are just like hitters. They get – you know, mechanical flaws in there. And you, mm-hmm. when you watch a guy like Brady, he has a tendency to pull glove side. And when that happens, he rotates off the ball. I could bore you with all the fancy pitching terms, kinetic chain and all that, but I'm not going to because I get tired of hearing guys talk about kinetic chain and what they've read it. They don't know what they're talking about, but there's a sequence that a pitcher has to do
mm-hmm.
and in order to get behind the ball and get that ball going the direction that they want. The minute a guy starts getting too rotational, say, pull off. And you can see Brady doing that right now, pulling balls glove side, leaving them up and in into righties and hitting them. I bet you by Friday night they're going to have that fixed, though, because Hobbs is amazing. The staff's mm-hmm. amazing, and Brady's amazing. So I bet you they'll get that little kink fixed before Friday.
This was Matt's quote after the game. He said, I guess, for lack of a better term, he's spinning off the ball a little bit. He's not staying through the ball as well as he was earlier in the season. He said, it's something we have to work on and fix. He's aware of it. I'm aware of it. It amazes me what coaches can see that maybe, you know, our untrained eye can't see.
Right. Well, Hobbs is a genius. I mean, I love listening to him talk. He sees stuff, you know, like, you know, you look at Dawson, you know, if you want to compare like what they saw when Dawson came out the next day,
mm-hmm.
he got ahead 0-2, hung a 1-2 breaking ball. His cutter left it up, a lefty hit it out of the yard. Next batter, I think, bunted on him. He came in and slipped and fell. Cooper wasn't looking bad, but they trust their eyes. And they're like, well, he didn't really have his stuff today. Let's go to Gackle. But back on, you know, Tigard, you know, and all the staff, I'll see Hobbs go out there and talk to him for just a second. And then what happens? Bam, strike, strike, mm-hmm. strike. It's incredible. I would love to know the next pitch strike percentage. There's not a stat. There's a stat for everything else, but after a Hobbs visit,
yep.
because he's like the pitcher whisperer, you know. He's just able to say the right thing, and then that guy gets back in line.
Let's talk real quick about the lineup. I thought Kendall Diggs and Peyton Stovall had a nice game on Saturday in the 1-2 position a couple of times where Stovall got on and Diggs knocks him in with an extra base hit. I thought Hudson White is starting. We talked about this last week. He looks like he's starting to look better. He had a 3-hit game in game one. And then Ryder Helfrich, that's the story, I think, of the weekend. Just the sequence, number one, of him coming off the bench, throwing the base runner out, who is the number one stolen base. I mean, he was tied for the national lead in stolen bases at the time that he got thrown out in the eighth inning, and he had run successfully three times against Arkansas in that game. And then he comes in the ninth, and Vin Scully always says it, you know, ain't that always the way, that the guy who makes the defensive play yeah. comes up to bat. And it was his first SEC at bat, and he just smoked that ball.
Yeah, first pitch. Right? First pitch he had yeah. seen as a SEC, as a player. Once again, that guy goes back to just pulling the right, I mean, the strings. I mean, Hobbs making the right call yeah. right there. You know, they pinch hit Souza. That's how he ended up in the game. And him throwing Weiss out. Of course, Auburn had used their challenges. He was safe. Yep. He was actually safe. But, you know, that's a lesson learned for Butch Thompson right there. But it was a great throw. Put it right on the bag. Everything looked good.
It was good enough that it looked good in real time.
Yeah, exactly. And you got to put it with Weiss running. You got to put it right on the bag. Mm-hmm. So it was a great throw. But I really liked that matchup. When he stepped up to the plate, I just felt good about it because, you know, the pitcher – the way his ball runs in a little bit, he keeps it down in the zone. I think he played right into Helfrich's bat, but a huge place for a freshman to be. And I was so proud of him for that big swing because I know he works really hard and he wants it so bad. And yeah, I was just happy for him.
Everybody is disputing the TrackMan reading that ball went 405 feet.
Oh my goodness, Matt, that thing went 500 feet. That ball, I think it went 400 feet before it stopped going. You think maybe it started its descent?
You think maybe that 37-foot wall, maybe the TrackMan lost track of the wall?
Yeah, I don't know.
That wall came into play in game three because you and I were talking about this. That home run that gave Auburn the lead in the sixth inning, that's probably a routine flyout at most other SEC parks.
I think every other park, every other day, that's probably an out. Now, there might be a day at Baum Walker where you get that big crosswind where
like sometimes, we had last night.
Yeah, a lefty's ball will carry out, but that ball doesn't go out at very many parks on very many nights. It was just unfortunate for Fisher. Almost had a double play to get out of the inning. I mean, I think if we look, I don't want people to overanalyze that game. If we go back and replay that game 10 times, we win 9 of them, I think. I think it was just a bunch of unfortunate little things that happen, in my opinion. But once again, I tend to look through Razorback goggles. But I just think if we replayed that and used the same guys and everything is replayed, we win that game 9 out of 10 times.
We got much more coming up on the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast, but first, a word from our sponsor.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Welcome back into the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast. This was the first time, Bubba, that I had not been at a game this year. I didn't make the trip to Auburn. You know, all the other games had been either at Fayetteville or in Arlington, and I was at that one. I'll tell you one thing that stood out to me watching the game on TV is how freaking big Hagan Smith looks on the mound. I mean, there's something about that center field camera back behind him that makes him look like a monster right now.
Yeah, he does. You've interviewed him. He's big. He's thick. Like, he is put on.
Yeah, but you know what they say about the TV. It adds, like, 15 pounds or something.
At least. I've seen myself on TV. Makes me want to go eat a salad sometimes. Yeah. He's worked so hard. But you're right. His body on TV and just his – when he's up on the mound, I mean, he just looks opposing. I mean, he just looks like the man.
You think does that intimidate hitters who are standing in against him?
Bad hitters, it does. Good hitters, I think it fires them up. I think good hitters want to face the best pitching. I mean, they really do. Like it. I mean, from day one, if you're a good hitter, you want to face the best guy out there. You know, I can tell you all the really good pitchers I faced.
Who was the best?
I'll tell you what. Kerry Wood probably had the best stuff of any guy I faced. I mean, it was really good. And you know, the scouting report was like, if he gets behind, he's going to throw you a fastball. Well, he got a 2-0 count on me, and I'm looking to hit one upper deck at Coors Field. He threw me a 2-0 changeup, and talk about looking silly. Because, you know, Clint Hurdle was our hitting coach at the time. He's like, man, if he gets behind, get ready, because he's not going to try to trick you. He's going to throw it by. He was throwing 97, 98 that day. He might have touched 99, but he threw me a 2-0 changeup, and about pulled a muscle. But, yeah, other than that, probably Carlos Zambrano, second best. I faced him in AAA, and he was hitting 103 on the gun and with a 90, 91, 92-mile-an-hour splitter. So he was probably the second best. We caught him on a bad day. He was really good that day, probably best day he ever had.
You were in the Yankees organization with Rivera. Did you ever stand in against him?
Yeah, I faced him in spring training a couple times. He didn't throw a lot of bad cutters. He actually threw me one bad cutter that kind of backed up over the plate, and I hit it pretty hard. But he's fun to face. I mean, when you face guys, I mean, you know, for him, he's just getting his work in. But for me, I'm like, I'm facing Mariano. Here we go. And then, like, you know, it's you see those guys, you're around them a lot, and you get used to it. But it's fun. Clemens, I faced him in pitcher's BP. And Clemens, though, was trying to get me out. Clemens, there's no pitcher's BP in spring training with Clemens throwing to you. I mean, he's wanting to get you out. He's wanting to just mow you down. He's not just trying to throw it over the plate. He had a different intensity and a different look on his face during pitcher's BP. It wasn't pitcher's BP. It was game seven for him right there. He was trying to get out.
So speaking of watching games on TV, former Auburn player was on the call for the first two games, Greg Olson, who's a great player for them. It's his name and his numbers on the Wall of Fame there with Frank Thomas in the outfield. And then Mark Fuller called the third game. I think it was I forget who it was. It was one of the two. But they both were there when Hal Baird was the coach, a longtime Auburn coach. And one of them, I'm going to get in trouble asking you this, but one of them used the term tunny thumber. Said that Hal Baird called a soft toss lefty. That's the first time I've ever heard this term. I think it might be like an old baseball term. As PG as you can, tell us what this is. Because
can I mute this for a minute? It depends on how you spell it.
Well, because when I asked you this yesterday on the phone, you gave me this laugh, and I had a feeling we might be going somewhere we shouldn't be.
It's a term that you don't use anymore. It's like some of the terms that I can't use on the air anymore. It's an old school way of describing a soft lefty. That's okay. You know, he's gonna flip the ball up there. You know, just a little crafty lefty. It's a different way of describing, I guess, what you'd call it, a crafty lefty.
So it's evolved into something else.
It's evolved. That's definitely old school. You don't hear that, especially on a broadcast like that. I'm proud of him for saying it. For going out there, going all in.
Now, I was told at Auburn, the students are positioned right over the opposing bullpen, and that it was lively. We'll put it that way. A lot of things were said. And that a lot of the Razorback relievers wanted to go out there and shut them up. I mean, tell me, like, you know, because you see this too. You played outfield. A lot of times, you know, when you're standing in, say, like, left field at Baum, you're going to get, you know, something from the hog pen or right field at Ole Miss. You know, those are kind of notorious areas where they're going to mess with the outfielders. When they're talking to you like that, you know, how good is it to shut them up?
It's nice to be able to, when they're getting on you and then you go in there, you go in the game and you shove. That's a really good feeling. Or if you're in the outfield and they're all over you and you go up to the plate and hit one over their head into the stands, that's a good feeling. But you can't let it affect you. You can't let it affect your approach. You can't go out and change, you know, oh, I'm going to show these guys. You know, I think it's just part of the game these days. And with social media, ragging people's changed from back in the day. Like, we would go in.
You're going to learn A&M. A lot more about people, too.
Oh, my goodness. Gosh. Back in the day, we'd get off the bus at A&M, and they'd be lining the sidewalk when we'd get off the bus all the way into the ballpark. And they were on me. I mean, obviously, with a name like Bubba, they're on me. And, you know, my brother was there, and every time he took a practice swing, one Bubba's brother, two Bubba's brothers, stuff like that. Like, they're all over everything you do. But now with social media, they know everything about you. They know your girlfriend's name. They know your mom's name. They know everything about you. So, and if you've ever done anything that you shouldn't do, that's out there, you're going to hear about it. So, yeah, you better keep it clean.
I was looking this up for you the other day. By the way, I'm pulling up your baseball reference page here. Oh, I had your full name on there. It's Charles Sidney Carpenter. Where'd Bubba come from?
A brother tried to call me his little brother. It came out little Bubby. Had a speech impediment. Came out Bubby, got stuck with it. And, you know, here we are, you know, 50 years later, and I'm still Bubby. I never thought it would be with me this long, but every level of baseball just went with me. And so now I guess I'm stuck with it. So it's permanent now. But only person that ever called me Charles Sidney was my mom. And when
you're mad.
When she called mad. Me Charles Sidney, I tell you what, I straightened up quick because I knew I did something wrong.
Yeah, on Baseball Reference, it's got your hometown as Dallas, too.
Does it really?
Yeah.
No. Well, I was born in Dallas, but we moved up here when I was...
You need to send an email and tell them about Brentwood.
Yeah, well, I don't want to give Dallas credit for that. I was born there, but we moved up here when we were young.
Do you remember your number, by the way, the number I gave you a couple of weeks ago?
17,642. Something like that.
Something like that. I don't remember.
Yeah, it was 17,000 something.
Yeah. So basically, here's where tell everybody where this comes from.
Well, I got a buddy. We were out to lunch, with another guy, Hunter Wood, that pitched in the big leagues, and we were talking about the odds of getting to the big leagues, and he was like 18,000 something, I want to say, and so. We were trying to figure out, he asked me what my number was. I said, well, I don't know. I said, but I'm going to ask Matt Jones. And so, cause you're incredible at finding stuff. I don't know where you find it, but,
17,652.
It's kind of, it's kind of a cool, we say that baseball is a fraternity, mm-hmm. So in the history of the game, I was 17,652 second guy. To get called up to the big leagues, which is it's kind of cool, because you think about it, in the history of the game, there's only been 20 something thousand yeah. players, and as a kid growing up, that's your dream. You asked me when I was 10 years old, I wanted to play Major League Baseball and I wanted to drive a chicken truck for Tyson. Those are the two things I wanted to do. I never got to drive the chicken truck for Tyson, but I was fortunate enough to play a little bit of big league baseball, and it was awesome, Matt. And so, that number, I was just kind of curious about it, and I'm not going to put it on my wall or anything. I just something I thought that was kind of cool.
You have your CDL?
Nope, no CDL.
Not too late.
Yep, I can still do it.
You could still fulfill that childhood dream. Yeah. And that's an unofficial number. I don't know how anybody finds it officially, but we looked through a lot of data to find that one for Bubba. I do know that you were the 49th player to debut in 2000. Sweet. I can tell you that off the top of my head.
Well, there you go. I appreciate it.
One thing that stands out to me about the weekend, and we touched on this a minute ago, is the job that the coaching staff did without Van Horn in the dugout. And I tell you, I wrote about this morning on our website, one of the things that just stands out to me is that Matt Hobbs, whenever he's ready, is ready for a head coaching job at a major program. He carries himself like a head coach, whether that be in the dugout, whether that be in the interviews with us. Everything he does just screams, this guy has got it, whatever that is. And so whenever the opportunity is right, I think he's going to be a head coach somewhere at a major program.
I think you're right. He's one of the few guys, like he always says the right thing. Like whether it's you and him talking, me and him, or him mm-hmm. talking to the media, him talking to his players, he always says the right thing, and that's hard to do. And the way his approach to the game, he doesn't get too high, doesn't get too low, and he's kind of even keel. He will get into you a little bit if you need it, but I just love his demeanor and not to mention his knowledge of the game. I mean, he's another one of those guys where I feel like, a lot of guys out there are playing checkers. He's playing chess. I mean, I just feel like he's so far ahead of the field in his approach to the game. And it's a lot like DVH. DVH is in the fourth inning when we're in the first inning. I mean, he's already thinking about stuff. And I think Hobbs is in that same category. And that's special in today's game where you get all these guys that rely on the analytics. It's refreshing to see guys that trust their eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Like he trusts his eyes. He can look out there and say, you know what? This guy's already seen this lineup twice. We're going to roll him through the third time because they're not hitting him. Why make a change if mm-hmm. they're not hitting him? Where other coaches, you look at Mizzou. We talked about Kerrick Jackson made a change. He didn't want the lefty, Pimentel, I think was his name, to yeah. face the lineup the third time through. Now, maybe it was pitch limit. He only had 76 pitches, but they didn't want him to see. The analytics say don't see that lineup the third time. Well, BS. I mean, they're not hitting you. Stay with it. If it's not broke, don't fix it. I mean, don't overcoach. And you never see Dave overcoach. You don't see Hobbs overcoach. And for me, it's refreshing as a baseball guy. I love the analytics,
mm-hmm.
but I love just, and I always say it, Joe Torre, the best quote of all time is, hey, analytics are great, but the game's got a heartbeat. Yeah. And I think that's what people forget.
I've talked to Matt about this because, he's got a ton of – of analytics at his dispense. I mean, they've got the Rapsodo machines and the TrackMans and the Smart Mound. And I mean, there's all kinds of technology that's down there. But one of the things he tells me is like, okay, I've got all of this data. What do I do with it? How do I kind of truncate this down into a digestible something to give to my pitchers? And I think that's maybe what sets him apart from some of the other coaches, like you're talking about, who really rely on that data.
You know, I don't want to misquote him, but I know he said it multiple times.
But you're
going to
do it.
See, I'm going to do it. I'm going to really screw this up. So Matt, I apologize in advance. But the way he describes all the analytics, it doesn't define the player. I want to say he describes it as an accessory to the player. I think, and I'm going to ask him Thursday to redefine that. But I want to say he describes it as an accessory to the player. It doesn't tell the full story. There's a whole lot more that goes with those numbers. I mean, what's inside a kid? You know, that's something that's not on the stat sheet, the analytics. Like, look at a Will McIntyre. If you looked at Will, you know, if you just went through the analytics and said, okay, fastball, you know, 88 to 92, you know, cutter 84 that looks reads like a slider, but it's a cutter. It's not going to jump off the page, but you don't know what's inside Will McIntyre. There's a fire inside him, and when the game's on the line, he's the guy you want to have the ball. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't, it's not on the analytics, but it's in here. And that's, I don't know, that's why I love Matt Hobbs.
Let's talk about LSU. They come to bomb this week, Thursday, Friday, Saturday series. LSU's scuffling a little bit. They're 2-4. They've lost both of their SEC series. One of them was a surprise. One of them not quite so surprising. They lost at Mississippi State to open conference play. Then they lose to Florida last weekend after they get ahead 1-0 in the series. The matchup Thursday night, in my opinion, is the pitching matchup of the year in the SEC. You've got Hagan Smith. We know everything he's done. Against Luke Holman at LSU, a right-hander who transferred from Alabama. And this guy is doing incredible things for LSU this year. He's top 10 nationally in ERA, top 11, I think, in WHIP. His ERA and his WHIP, I know this because they're the exact same number. They're both .78. Those are really good numbers. And he's pitched his tail off. He was the National Pitcher of the Month in February when we all thought that Hagan could potentially get that award for what he did against Oregon State. And it's interesting because this is the same weekend last year when we got Dahlander versus Skeens down in Baton Rouge on a Thursday night. And so this is going to be fun, I think, Thursday night, Hagan versus Holman.
I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm an offensive guy. You know, I love offense, but I love watching a good offense approach a really good pitcher. So I'm really looking forward to seeing our offense go up against Luke Holman. And like I said before, I guarantee you every guy in our lineup is foaming at the mouth to face Luke Holman because you want to face the best. And I know those guys and they're competitors and they can't wait to get out there and see him. But it's going to be a lot of fun. If you're a baseball fan, I mean, that's one of the best matchups you're going to see in college baseball.
What do you think it is about LSU? Because they've had a different pitching coach every year, but under Jay Johnson, they've had a lot of success at getting these transfers to come in and really kind of redefine themselves. Like, we knew Paul Skeens was a good pitcher when he was at Air Force, but then he goes to LSU and he finds something else. I mean, he was not throwing, you know, an average of 99 miles an hour every pitch when he was at Air Force. And we're seeing kind of the same thing with Holman. He was a good pitcher at Alabama, but seems like he's found something different about himself down there.
You know, I think with Schemes, you know, listening to Schemes talk, a lot of it was just, you know, at Air Force, it was just the regimen of getting up. Just so many other things other than baseball kind of took away from his ability to put time in. Now, for Holman, I don't know what happened with Holman. Maybe it's just a maturity thing. Or you look at some of our pitchers, how they make that big jump from their sophomore to their junior year. You know, a lot of guys, you know, and Isaiah Campbell made a huge jump from sophomore to junior year. Yeah. So I think a lot of that's just maturity. I mean, I don't think they've got the magic pill down there for pitching. I think that's just what it is. But yeah, I mean, they've done a good job with Holman and his numbers back it up.
Now, he is susceptible. He had a bad game against Mississippi State 2 weeks ago. 10 hits, 5 runs, 2 of them were earned, only went 4 2/3 innings. But then he bounces back. And I think Florida's got the best lineup in the SEC probably. I mean, he shut him down last week. 6 innings, 1 run, 1 hit, 13 strikeouts. That kind of shows the potential that he has.
I think so. I think Florida's a good lineup. I think they're a lineup that'll chase a little bit. I think they will. You know, hopefully we'll go out with a really good – I know we're going to go out with a good plan and approach. I know the scouting reports are there on him. I think if we stay with the approach that Nate Thompson puts together, you know, I say – people say all the time, good pitching beats good hitting. Mm-hmm. But I think good hitting can beat good pitching with the right approach. Like in today's scouting, we know what that guy, we know his tendencies, we know what pitch he's going to go to. Now, he can get away from the scouting report, but I think if you've got the right approach, you can go out against a Luke Holman and you can beat him, and you can put up some numbers on him.
I feel like getting a win, obviously, getting a win within the first two games is huge against LSU, because if you don't win, you lose the series. But game three, they've been really susceptible in their bullpen the last 2 weeks. They got run ruled at Mississippi State, and they got run ruled by Florida. That tells you that there might be something there for Arkansas on Saturday.
Oh, I think so. I mean, I really think looking ahead, and I think it's important that we, you know, we get Holman out of there as soon as possible and get to the bullpen.
Yeah.
You know, get his pitch count up. And I think our hitters do a great job of working the count, you know, and fouling off pitches. You saw it last night out of our guys. Of course, we're not seeing LSU caliber pitchers, but we do a great job of fouling off pitches. We're not striking out a lot. I love that. So if we can get his pitch count up, get him out early and get into that bullpen Thursday, I think by Saturday they're not going to have anything left. And the thing about I see LSU coming in, and if you watch the game or watch the highlights, it got real chippy down there, you know.
It did.
The Florida game. Yeah. Did you hear about all that?
No, I saw it. Yeah, Jay Johnson got ejected. I actually listened to his coach's show the other night. He said, I got an email from the SEC that reminded me I can't get ejected again. He said, so you're not going to see that type of animation out of me anymore.
Well, that's LSU. They run their mouth. They're a lot like Tennessee. They do. They
run Florida does, too.
Well, you're right. You're right. And I don't know who started it. But
and that's a hotly contested series. That was the national championship last year that went to game three. So
you're right.
A little bit of a history there. Hey, speaking – how about Tommy White? How do you attack Tommy White if you're pitching him?
You know, he does lefties. He doesn't do well against lefties. I've got his splits here. Against lefties, he's 259 against lefties, 342 against righties. But what I see guys do all the time against Tommy White, I think he's a guy, I don't want to call him a slider bat speed guy, but I see guys get ahead all the time and then they flip a two-strike slider up there and he hammers it.
Mm-hmm.
I think you got to pound him in, you know, get him cheating in. Then you can get him away with that slider. But you leave it over in the middle of the plate, I think he's going to smoke it. But that's kind of what I see in Tommy White. I think Hagen's going to have a good day against him. But I think he's got holes in his swings, and he will expand the zone. If you can execute that pitch, he'll chase that slider off the plate. But, boy, if you leave it over the middle, he will hurt you.
Should be big crowds. The weather's supposed to be really nice this weekend, you know, probably in the 70s, maybe even 80s for these matchups. On a weeknight Thursday, it kind of makes you wonder what it'll be like. Of course, it this week they play on Thursday, Friday, Saturday because of Easter. Used to, they would play games on Easter Sunday, and you just wouldn't get anybody show up to the ballpark. So even a small crowd on Thursday is probably going to be bigger than you would get if you played a game on Easter Sunday. But LSU struggled in Baum in the past. They haven't won a game, or they haven't won a series here in Fayetteville since 17, and that's the series where Arkansas should have won it. Jax Biggers had a throwaway at the end of the second game that would have won the series for them. And they struggled in front of a big crowd a couple of weeks ago at Duty Noble. And so it makes you wonder how the environment might impact this weekend.
I think it could be big. I mean, and I know our Baumwalker fans, they're going to be there. Thursday night, it's going to be a little bit cool Thursday night, but I think we're going to pack that place in. I think it's going to be crazy. And I think that environment is – I think our players feed off of that. I really do. I think some teams – haven't played as well in front of Baumwalker when it gets full like that, but I think this is a team that's going to feed off of that. We got a veteran team, and I think it's going to be a fun night. I think it's going to be a fun weekend all the way around. Weather gets better, you know, Friday and Saturday, so, man, I'm hoping we pack that place in.
These are the series that you buy your season tickets for. I mean, you know, like you got a lot of people who don't show up for a lot of games, but you buy them for the weeks that LSU comes in and the weeks that Florida comes in later this year that's going to be a big one. Let's get out of here on this because Auburn – is 1-5 in the SEC West, and I think Auburn's a really good team. LSU's 2-4 in the SEC West, and they're still ranked 7th nationally. They're still feeding, I think, some off of that national championship that they won last year. What do you think the power structure is in the SEC West right now? Because it's interesting to me, you got Arkansas that's won so many division championships over the last 5 or 6 years, they just haven't been able to win that last game of the year in Omaha. And during that time when Arkansas is dominating the regular season, maybe for lack of a better term, Mississippi State's won a championship, and Ole Miss has won a championship, and LSU's won a championship. How do you what do you think the power structure is in the SEC West? Because I think a lot of people could see it a different way.
Look, we're the big dogs. I mean, without a doubt.
Do you lend more credence to regular season success than you do postseason success?
I give credence to being consistent.
Yeah.
The game of baseball is about consistency. And if you look at year in and year out, we're the team to beat in the West. I mean, we really are. I mean, you know, last year LSU had a good team. You know, they were mm-hmm. destined to go a long way. You look at the year before, you know, Ole Miss won it. They were the last team in NCAA tournament. They got hot at the right time. Yep. They win it. Yep. I think you go back to that game against DeLucia. If DeLucia and look, it is what it is. It's the game of baseball. And I'm sorry, I'm getting sidetracked here, but I think this is really important to your point. We faced DeLucia that last game, and he had a good home plate matchup. Mm. The umpire matched up perfect to DeLucia's pitches.
Interesting.
He was throwing the slider off the plate. He was getting mm-hmm. pitches off the plate the whole game. Now, we didn't make an adjustment. It's up to us. I mean, both teams pitched to the same umpire. I think any other umpire, most other days, we beat DeLucia right there. We go on and we win a national championship. But I just think – I think we're the team that kind of got the bullseye on our back because we're at the top of the heap every year. Mm-hmm. But you look at an Auburn team. I mean, they're 1-5. I think they're a good team, Matt.
I do too.
I think they're a really good team.
But look at their schedule. I mean, their first 21 games in the SEC this year are against teams that are ranked in the top 25 right now.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
I
mean,
I think they have good pitching. I think their lineup is really good. They mm-hmm. just – I mean, they showed a little bit against our staff, but I mean, it just says how good our staff is. But I think at the end of the day, you're gonna hear from Auburn at the end of the year. I think they're a better team than people think they are.
I don't know if there's any great way to answer who's the best team or what's the best program in the SEC West.
Razorbacks.
But I do to your point. You know, it's why I give more. I think more of regular season championships than I do of like an SEC tournament championship because, okay, great, you got hot for a week.
Yeah.
You know, you've got the best record over 10 weeks. That says something to me in a sport like baseball. So, but it's interesting because you got Ole Miss and Mississippi State. I know Mississippi State's kind of coming back up, but, you know, you got them kind of scuffled along after they've won a couple of national championships. Auburn, it's amazing. Alabama's on the rise again. It's such an incredibly tough division, and this is the last year of the SEC West. It changes next year when Oklahoma and Texas come into the league. Arkansas and LSU this weekend. Game times, I'm going off the top of my head here. Thursday is at 6, Friday is at 7, and Saturday is at 2 at Baum-Walker Stadium. You can hear Bubba and Phil Elson on the Razorback Sports Network, and hope you'll come to our website at wholehogsports.com and read all of our coverage. We're going to have a ton of coverage from Arkansas and LSU. We'll see you next week on the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast.
Thanks to Kendall King, where their design talents are showcased by teamwork. Kendall King, Shop Cart, and Soapbox. They're your design professionals with home run stats.